Teaching English Today, The Four Seas and Beyond by Louise Carlton-Gertsch is powered by Ernst Klett Sprachen, der Verlag für modernes Fremdsprachenlernen in Schule, Ausbildung, Universität und Erwachsenenbildung. Sprachenlernen fürs Leben.
Hello and welcome to Teaching English Today, The Four Seas and Beyond. A podcast in which we'll be looking at ways to help students of English develop important skills for the 21st century. I'm your host, Louise Carlton-Gertsch. All the tireless communicating we do throughout our lives has a main overriding purpose. The purpose is to influence other minds, to sway how people think, feel, and ultimately behave. Whenever we communicate, we're using airy and insubstantial words to move each other around, even if only a little, thereby rearranging the world in our favour. This is how Jonathan Gottschalk describes the reason why we communicate in the introduction to his book, The Story Paradox. And he's right. We communicate all the time, in conversations with friends or colleagues, on the phone, when we give a presentation, write an email, share something on social media. And as he points out, the reason we do so is to establish a connection with other people, to try to get them around to our way of thinking, on our side, if you like. Yet, despite the fact that this is something we do automatically, communication consistently numbers among the skills most sought after by employers today. Why is this? It's because the ability to communicate effectively is complex. Communication can take very different forms, including written, visual, verbal or non-verbal, and occur in different contexts, such as face-to-face in the real world or in the digital sphere. And at the same time, it covers an array of skills that need to be learned and honed. So how can we improve our communication skills? In an article for Forbes magazine at the beginning of 2023, Mary Sharp Emerson from the Harvard Division of Continuing Education provides 8 tips for better communication in the workplace. Her first tip is to aim for clarity and conciseness. She stresses the need to carefully choose one's words and be brief wherever possible. To this end, she explains that we need to define our goals and audience before we even begin. By outlining the what, who, and why before we begin, we can focus on conveying our message. The second tip is to prepare ahead of time. This doesn't just refer to preparing what it is we want to say, but also to think about what information might be needed to support our message, how we're going to respond to questions, feedback, or even criticism, and then trying to anticipate what might happen, even if it's unexpected. The third one she talks about is being mindful of our nonverbal communication, so ensuring that our nonverbal cues match our words. We'll take a closer look at this a little later on. Fourthly, she stresses the need to watch our tone, ensuring that the way the message is delivered is consistent with the words. This means that the tone, the volume, projection, and intonation can all either support or undermine what we're saying, depending on how we do it. Then comes active listening. Thus, really listening to what the other person is saying, being open-minded rather than just waiting to voice one's own opinions, giving the person who's speaking one's full attention, pushing aside distractions, judgments, and the urge to interrupt or jump in with our own opinions. And again, to ensure that our nonverbal cues reflect the fact that we really are listening. Next, she talks about building our emotional intelligence. So being aware of your own emotions and behaviour and being able to understand those of the person that we're interacting with. The seventh concerns developing a workplace communication strategy. Who gets which information and when, so that everyone is in possession of the correct information at the right time. Emerson talks about the need for creating basic communication guidelines to ensure that everybody has what they need. And finally, she stresses the need to create a positive organisational culture. As she explains, in a positive work environment, one founded on transparency, trust, empathy and open dialogue, communication in general will be easier and more effective. She points out that employees will be more open to hearing their boss's message if they trust them. And although these 8 tips apply to employees in their workplace, they're just as relevant for students in the classroom. Good communication skills are so important that they're highly cultivated by business leaders too. In an article, How Great Leaders Communicate, for the Harvard Business Review in November 2022, Carmine Gallo explains that ideas are today's currency, but without the ability to put them across, they're worthless. He writes, "And that's why communication is no longer considered a soft skill among the world's top business leaders. Leaders who reach the top do not simply pay lip service to the importance of effective communication. Instead, they study the art in all its forms, writing, speaking, presenting, and constantly strive to improve on those skills." So what do great leaders actually do? Well, first of all, they avoid using complex words and jargon. People often believe that the more complex the language, the more intelligent a person is. Yet, while this might hold up in a literary context, in most other contexts, this just isn't the case. The point is to communicate with others, to share ideas. And this won't happen if the other person doesn't understand what we're saying. As Daniel Kahneman writes in his book, Thinking, Fast and Slow, when talking about how to write a persuasive message, he says, "If you care about being thought credible and intelligent, don't use complex language where simpler language will do." Contrary to what people often think, a study conducted by Danny Oppenheimer with undergraduates showed that describing familiar ideas using pretentious language was seen as a sign of poor intelligence and low credibility. And as we've seen so often over the course of history, influential leaders use simple language to get their message across to the masses. But making things easier to understand doesn't mean leaders are dumbing things down. Rather, as Gallo puts it, they're outsmarting the competition. And just a little aside, The Conversation, an independent source of news from the academic and research community, encourages its contributors to write how people talk, to explain complex ideas, to avoid jargon, and not to get too technical. They do so as they want everybody to be able to access their expert knowledge, including those whose first language isn't English. Secondly, according to Gallo, great business leaders also choose suitable metaphors. Metaphors can be used to communicate complex or abstract information in short, catchy phrases that enable people to better understand what's being said and then remember it. The third technique they employ is the humanization of data, making numbers and statistics memorable by placing them in a context that can be understood by the listener or reader. Gallo gives the example that humans are expected to produce 175 zettabytes of data per year by 2025. Well, this is a number that I can't even begin to imagine, even if it is described as being 1 trillion gigabytes. So Gallo goes on to visualize the data. He says, "What if I said that if you could store 175 zettabytes of data on DVDs, the disks would circle the Earth 222 times? It's still a big number, but the description is more engaging because it paints a vivid image in your mind's eye." And I have to admit, it really does help me. Now, of course, this is quite a challenging exercise, trying to find an equivalent that can also be comprehended by your audience. But nevertheless, it's one that I think students should definitely be encouraged to try out in their next presentation. Now let's take a closer look at the importance of nonverbal communication. It's something that we often tend to underestimate, but as Emerson pointed out, it's absolutely vital, especially when we look at what researchers have found out. Some studies have shown that nonverbal communication carries between 65 and 93% more impact than the actual words that are spoken, especially when the message involves emotional meaning and attitudes. So what does it actually consist of? Well, first and foremost are facial expressions. A person's facial expression is usually the first thing we see, even before we hear what a person has to say. So we can often tell whether we're about to receive good or bad news, depending on what their face looks like. Although nonverbal communication and behaviour can differ between cultures, certain facial expressions are universal. Think happiness, anger, sadness, and fear. Of course, it's important that a person's facial expression matches their message. If someone is trying to convince us of the benefits of their proposal, but their facial expression is a little fearful, this will, of course, undermine their words. It can be helpful to practice delivering your message in front of a mirror or even recording yourself on camera to ensure that the expression and the message don't contradict one another. Our body language and posture are also forms of nonverbal communication. Think about the effect that crossed arms or raised and outstretched palms have. And people who are engrossed in their phones on public transport are also giving a clear signal about not wanting to be disturbed. The way we stand also affects how we're seen. If we stand up straight and tall, we send a message of being confident and self-assured. Bad posture, on the other hand, suggests that we might have low self-esteem or low energy levels. I also personally find that this has a big impact on how I deliver a webinar or record my podcast. For me, sitting is a more passive stance, whereas when I'm standing, it feels more dynamic. This is, of course, a personal decision, but it's worth trying both just to see which works best for you. Gestures such as pointing or giving the thumbs up sign are a way people communicate without the need for language. Yet, as with certain facial expressions, gestures are often firmly rooted in a particular culture and are not transferable. So it's wise to avoid using them in intercultural encounters unless you're completely sure that they won't cause offence. For instance, making the V or peace sign with the palm facing towards you can be seen as a rude gesture in parts of the United Kingdom. The importance of paralinguistics, so the tone of voice, inflection, pitch, and even loudness, shouldn't be underestimated either. The tone has to reflect the intent. We can change the meaning of a simple sentence by the way we say it. This is, of course, why communication on social media can be so fraught at times, as we misinterpret the intention behind words, as we cannot hear the way the messenger intends them to be understood. Proxemics, or personal space, can also affect communication. This is, of course, again dependent on culture, personal factors, and level of familiarity between the people who are conversing, but it can be used as a means of creating a comfortable or uncomfortable atmosphere when talking to someone. Our gaze or eye contact. We all know how uncomfortable it can be if our conversation partner stares too intently or even avoids eye contact. And a steady, as opposed to intense, gaze is seen as being more trustworthy and truthful. The problem is that in recent years, we've reduced the amount of eye contact we have with others. According to research by Quantified Communications in 2013, most adults only held eye contact 30 to 60% of the time, although research has shown that we should be doing so for between 60 and 70% of the time. This is because it's a great way to build a connection with the other person and also sends a signal that we're interested in what they're saying. However, this negative trend has been exacerbated by our need to constantly interact with our smartphones and, of course, in recent times, due to the move to work from home during the pandemic. Haptics play a role too. A hand carefully placed on a back or arm can communicate sympathy and support, or it can be a sign to calm down, depending on how it's done, the pressure used, and the situation. And then there's our appearance, the clothes we wear, our hairstyles, body art. All of this is a non-verbal form of communication. So it's not just a question of choosing the words we use, but we also need to really consider the way we convey our words, the gestures we make, our body language, and so forth. How can we hone communication skills in the English-speaking classroom? Even today, in the era of YouTube and Netflix, many students of English still find it difficult to employ paralinguistics when speaking. Some have a tendency to speak more in a monotone or don't use inflection or emphasis. And of course, this is a skill that really needs to be worked on. A great way to practice this with students is to get them to record themselves speaking so that they have an opportunity to listen to themselves afterwards. And what better way than getting groups of students to create an episode for a class podcast? This creates an authentic context and allows students to practice in a more controlled environment, as opposed to the usual spoken context that's much more spontaneous. This is because students may use a script for parts of their podcast and are thus able to focus on the delivery of the words and ideas rather than having to come up with them on the spur of the moment. They should also experiment with their posture, standing straight, sitting slouched, to see how this affects their delivery. Theatre exercises can also be of great help to get students to speak more confidently. So getting students to experiment saying lines in different ways and to see how this can affect their meaning and the audience's understanding. In fact, according to a study by George Mason University and the Commonwealth Theatre Centre in the US that followed children between the ages of 5 and 18 over a six-year period, theatre had a positive impact on their communication skills. As Catherine Dawson, Associate Professor of Theatre at the University of Texas, explains, this is because when you put something in your body, it's more durable, it lasts longer, and you remember it longer. And this even works with nonverbal activities such as mirroring, an activity for pairs of students. The students face one another and make eye contact. One of them is the leader, the other's the follower. The leader begins miming simple actions, such as brushing their teeth or waving and such things, and the follower copies the movements as if they're the mirror image. The students have to use nonverbal communication to sync up and to establish a connection with one another. Another aspect is, of course, the need to get students to really think about each task or situation within its context, to consider the audience, the purpose, and most importantly, the message they're trying to send. To get them to focus on these points, it might be worth getting them to make separate notes to this end before they embark on a particular task. They should also think about in which contexts it might make more sense to focus on simpler language and syntax so as to be able to get their message across. And at the same time, to get them to understand that explaining something in simple terms and using everyday language can be just as challenging as if they're using more complex terminology. Of course, I'm sure you have many different ways of honing communication skills with your students, and I'd really be interested in hearing how you do so. So please do drop me a line and share your thoughts. The ability to communicate well is associated with personal, academic, and career success. Yet the skills that are needed are not always developed when young people enter the workplace. Although we spend a lot of time talking and sharing in all kinds of contexts, we're not always communicating effectively. As William H. White wrote in an article back in 1950, the great enemy of communication, we find, is the illusion of it. Thanks for listening.
Teaching English Today, The Four C's and Beyond by Louise Carlton-Gerch was brought to you by Ernst Klett Sprachen, der Verlag für modernes Fremdsprachenlernen in Schule, Ausbildung, Universität und Erwachsenenbildung. Sprachenlernen fürs Leben.